If asking your mate down the pub about vaping, here's what they'd probably say. No one agrees if it's safer or not, so you might as well smoke anyway. Now what your mate needs is a Cochrane review. All the facts have been checked at least twice. They'd find there's a lot that the experts agree on and might give you different advice.
Hi, my name is Nicola and I'm a researcher based at the University of Oxford in the UK.
And I'm Jamie and I'm a researcher based at the University of Massachusetts Amherst in the United States.
We are both members of the Cochrane Tobacco Addiction Group. Welcome to this edition of Let's Talk E-Cigarettes. This podcast is a companion to a research project being carried out at the University of Oxford, where every month we research the e-cigarette research literature to find new studies. We then use these studies to update our Cochrane systematic reviews of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation and interventions for quitting vaping. This type of review is called a living systematic review, and in each episode we start by going through the studies we found that month and then go into more detail about a particular study or topic related to e-cigarettes.
This month we ran our searches on the 1st of March 2026. For our e-cigarette smoking cessation review, we found one new included study and three papers linked to studies we've already found. For our interventions for quitting vaping review, we found one new study, two ongoing studies, and five papers linked to previously included studies. We're going to tell you about those and ongoing studies in a nutshell.
Thanks, Jamie. I'm going to start with the new study that we found looking at e-cigarettes for smoking cessation. The lead author is Georgia Papadosifaki from the University of West Attica in Greece. It's published in the Archives of Hellenic Medicine and is titled Smoking Cessation for People with Severe Mental Illness, a Pilot Randomized Controlled Trial. They recruited 43 people who smoked experiencing severe mental illness and randomly assigned them to either a group receiving an e-cigarette and behavioral support or a group receiving behavioral support alone. They found that 33% of the e-cigarette participants had quit at 6 months, compared to 14% in the behavioral support only group. No sources of funding appear to have been reported. The first ongoing study that we found for our Interventions for Quitting Vaping review is a trial registry titled Testing a Digital Tool to Support Healthy Lifestyle Choices for Patients Awaiting Outpatient Orthopaedic Consultations. It appears to be being led by Hunter New England Local Health District in Australia. They're planning to recruit 1,200 people on the orthopaedic consultation waiting list who they will randomise to either a digital tool that is designed to help them to change various health behaviours, including smoking and vaping, or to usual care. The study is funded by New South Wales Health and New South Wales Regional Health Partners. I will hand over to Jamie to tell you more about the other interventions for quitting vaping studies that we found.
Thanks, Nicola. So the other ongoing interventions for quitting vaping study is also a trial registry. It's called Evaluating the Efficacy and Safety of Cytisinicline for Vaping Cessation in Adults Using Nicotine-Containing E-Cigarettes. Cytisinicline is also commonly known as cytisine, and it's a drug that is used to help people quit smoking. The trial is being run by Achieve Life Sciences, who are the company that manufactured the drug. They plan to recruit 800 adults who are daily nicotine e-cigarette users, and they're going to randomize them to either 12 weeks of cytisinicline or 12 weeks of placebo, and both groups are going to receive behavioral support. That study is due to complete in September 2027. The one new included study that we found for interventions for quitting vaping is the subject of this month's deep dive. For this, Nicola had the pleasure of interviewing Professor Pam Ling, who's based at the University of California, San Francisco. Pam told Nicola all about her newly published study that has come out as a preprint in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine and was funded by the UCSF Helen Diller Comprehensive Cancer Center and the Tobacco-Related Diseases Research Program. It recruited 500 young people to test whether Instagram support groups can help people to quit vaping, and we'll let Pam tell you more about it.
Okay, great. Well, hi, and thanks for agreeing to be on the podcast, Pam. It's really great to meet you. I was wondering if in the first instance you could just tell me a little bit about yourself and what in particular brought you to studying e-cigarettes.
Sure, thanks for having me, Nicola. I have been doing tobacco research for, I realize now, about 25 years, and I've been a long Times student of looking at tobacco industry marketing strategies and how the industry sells cigarettes to young people. Mm-hmm. And so I've been working with young people for a long time, and I got interested in e-cigarettes because as the tobacco marketplace changed over the past decades, e-cigarettes became really popular among young people. And so because that's the population I work with, it naturally expanded our work into e-cigarette world.
Yeah, makes sense. And obviously you've come onto the podcast because your study was published this month and we were really excited to see it come up in our literature searches. And one of the things that really stood out about your treatment design was that this is kind of a treatment that you've used that we haven't actually seen before for quitting vaping. And I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit more about your intervention and also where the idea came from to use this intervention.
Yeah, right. This intervention is support groups that take place on social media. So it's a little different than some of the other published studies because most of them are individual text messages or individual counseling types of support or medicines. Mm. So this idea of doing support groups on social media was actually pioneered by Danielle Ramo, who is a researcher who was at UCSF. And maybe 10 years ago, she started doing support groups for smoking cessation on Facebook.
Amazing.
Now that sounds really old, right? sounds really dated now, but that was the original idea. Mm. And again, it was because Facebook was really popular among young adults at the time. And you could do these private chat groups on Facebook where she would counsel people and take them through a 3-month program like you would do for smoking cessation counseling groups in person. And they took place entirely on Facebook. So she published a few randomized trials of that intervention. And then at the time I was doing bar interventions and, you know, making smoking cessation cooler by doing cool interventions in bars for young people. And Danielle and I got together and said, what if we mash up this idea of doing support groups on Facebook with the social branding work that I was doing? And so we created an intervention called the Commune Smoke-Free Social, which was smoking cessation on Facebook, and ran that through our cancer center for a few years in the San Francisco Bay Area where we're located. And then as things came along, you know, the youth vaping epidemic really exploded in the US, and people started asking what supports are there to help young people quit vaping. And we thought, well, why don't we take this idea and adapt it? So by then, young people were not on Facebook anymore. So we said, let's adapt it to a new platform on Instagram, which was the most popular platform that young people were on that could still have the support group type of model. Mm. At that time, Danielle had left UCSF, but she was working for Hope Lab. And so Hope Lab does a lot of human-centered design. They do a lot of interventions for young people. And so working in partnership with them and with Rescue Agency, which was my social marketing partners, we all worked together to develop this intervention on the Instagram platform. And it also shortened. It went from 3 months to about a 5-week intervention. And that was designed to maximize engagement over the time of the groups. Mm. But that's where the idea came from. And then we just did this randomized trial looking at whether it actually helped young people quit vaping.
Amazing. It seems like a really great example of kind of trying to meet people where they are, which is so important when you're trying to, you know, help people in this way. And I was wondering if you'd mind just summarizing the main results of your study for us.
Yeah. So this was a randomized trial. So we randomized about 500 adolescents and young adults to two conditions. One was to be in the support groups on Instagram. And the control condition was a referral to California's Quitline services. And the control is actually different from some of the other trials because it's really the standard of care for tobacco cessation. And our Quitline in California does offer some support for vaping cessation. So it was actual vaping support. And they have a website, they have an app, they have a text message program, and they have live counselors by telephone. Which of course young people really don't, they don't like to talk on the telephone. So
yeah,
but it was available. And we implemented the program over the 5 weeks and followed people up at the end of program, 3 months and 6 months follow-up. And what we found was over the course of the 6 months, we had significantly more participants in the Instagram support groups quit vaping compared to the quit line.
Amazing. Yeah, that's really exciting results. And one of the things I was wondering is, was there anything that kind of surprised you about what you found or what that you thought was particularly notable, I suppose?
Well, I think there was two things. One was that I was very glad to see that young people were engaging with the support groups on Instagram. And when we looked at whether people liked the program, they liked the Instagram groups and they liked the Quitline services. But the real difference was they were much more engaged in the Instagram groups. Mm. You know, they were more active on them. They were more likely to talk to other people about them. So it was almost like the quality of the intervention itself was pretty similar to what you would get on the Quitline. But the real difference was willingness to, like, as you said, like, be where people are at. So because our young people are already on Instagram, it seemed like that made it easier for them to engage with, like, a cessation support and kind of demystified what it would be like to be in counseling.
Yeah.
The other thing that we learned was that it's really hard to do a clinical trial on Instagram.
Okay.
So we implemented the whole clinical trial on Instagram. All of our contact, all of our advertising was on Instagram and social media. All of our contacts to remind people to do surveys was on Instagram. And I mean, one of the real limitations of the study was that, you know, we had a lot of dropout over the 6 months, in part because we found, like, it's very hard to stay in touch with young people, as I'm sure you know, but also especially on Instagram, it's so easy to block people and change your username and all of those things. And at the time, it was just post-pandemic. And I feel like people, normally you can contact people three times and, you know, they'll finally come around to doing the survey. And our team found that our participants were really quick to, like, block you and change their username and drop out of the study at the follow-up. So we didn't have as the kind of retention that I would have liked and that you might typically see in a clinical trial. But it's a very real-world type of experience.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've done some trials myself, but never on social media, so that would be a complete new experience for me, and it's really interesting to hear about. That's great.
Yeah, it has advantages and disadvantages.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you've probably kind of already answered this question, but feel free to add anything else. Were there any kind of particular challenges in undertaking the study, apart from obviously the kind of social media aspect?
Yeah, well, I think anytime you do a study that's like a support group type of study, right, you need a human. So everyone who participated in our support groups, they were all convened by a trained tobacco cessation counselor who's been really doing this kind of work for years. So if you think about scalability, right, one of the big advantages to being on a social media platform could be incredibly high reach. But because this is a group intervention, you're going to be limited by the availability of a counselor.
Right. Yes.
To facilitate the group. So unlike something, let's say, a chatbot that you can just roll out and let the chatbot do its thing, right? These groups do require a human. I do think that the people attracted to this type of intervention really want a real human, and they really want actual people as in the support group. So I think that if you talk to different young people, they have different preferences, right, for what type of support they might use. And so people who are, you know, really want high privacy, people who need medication or something that's very intensive with the clinician, this is not a good match. Mm-hmm. But for people who are on social media platforms, because they want to connect with other people socially, these kind of groups are nice because they're actual people. You're doing mostly social support, and you have that group setting where, you know, they, you know, the chats will be like, I'm standing outside the vape shop right now. And other people in the chat group will be like, don't do it, bro. You know? And that sort of, you know, group support is something that's a really nice fit for this.
Yeah.
But we couldn't instantly go to, like, you know, 500,000 people or a million people the way you can do with some of the really large scale automated interventions. I do think there's some interest now in thinking about whether, you know, an AI agent could be the counselor.
Yeah.
And certainly that might be helpful in terms of scalability, but I think it would also require a lot of supervision by humans to make sure, like, what was happening in those groups.
Yeah, that makes sense. And one thing we often ask people at the end of the podcast is, If money and resource were no problem, what would you like to see happen in this kind of space in the future?
Yeah, I think that we do really need to keep evolving how we do this kind of cessation support, both for new media platforms and for new products as they come out. And the product landscape is changing so quickly that by the time we get something that's, you know, an intervention that is rigorously tested for vaping cessation, now what we're hearing is teachers in school saying, what is there for nicotine pouch cessation?
Yeah.
Right now I have all these college students who are addicted to pouches. And so to the extent that we can keep evolving our interventions to meet the product marketplace, at least almost as fast as new things come out, I think that's really, really help. And then of course, you know, maybe next year Instagram is going to be yesterday, right? And we need to think about what can we do on TikTok or what can we do on the next new platform. And again, that landscape is also changing so rapidly that being able to adapt the core, at least I'm reassured that the core of what we do in terms of counseling, right, it's not that different. It's not like we had a magic formula for how to do the cessation supports, right? Like making a plan, but being able to make that really flexible and nimble enough to adapt to new platforms and really the kind of look, feel, and style the way young people communicate these days is really important. And I work with a lot of young people who are much cooler than I am so that they can put things in the right language, it has the right feel, it fits the platform, and all of that, I think, is the other place that we really need to keep innovating.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's something that sometimes as researchers find challenging, but it's great that you're doing that.
Yes, I know my limitations in that space. I know it needs to be really cool, and I know that I am not that cool. So, and I feel like as researchers, sometimes our job is to help to provide the infrastructure and support to let young people really, you know, be as creative as possible in this space and then test it rigorously to really see if it works or not, but really being open to how a young person might approach, you know, how they'll talk about something, how they'll make it attractive, and how they'll keep their friends engaged, I think is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for being on the podcast. It's been really great to speak to you.
Sure, it's a pleasure.
Nicola, I loved that interview. Thank you so much for doing it. Obviously, also massive thanks to Professor Ling for coming on. The first thing I'd like to say is that I know our bar for cool in, you know, tobacco and scientific research is pretty low, but I definitely think Pam Ling is cool and she's underselling herself on that one. I loved hearing about how this kind of evolved from her work in bars. And I really thought this message of meeting people where they're at was something that really resonated. Another thing it left me with was this feeling of not just specific to this study, but really specific to our field overall. Like, what can we do to speed up our scientific research so that it's relevant when it comes out? You know, she was saying about new products. She was saying, you know, Instagram isn't going to be around forever. That's going to be replaced by something else. How do we try and come up with novel methods for funding or streamlining ethics applications or adaptive trial designs where we can really be like, okay, this is what's going on right now. It's been such a frustration within our e-cigarette research that a lot of the times by the time a study that let's say is testing an e-cigarette to help people quit smoking is out, no one can get that e-cigarette. It's been replaced by a new generation of devices. So it was interesting to hear her talk about that. And though it's a really tricky problem to overcome, I do think it's kind of like our moral and ethical duty as scientists to see if we can do that without sacrificing quality, right? Like, how do we make sure that these things can get conducted and be relevant and come out when they're still relevant? And it's great that this was at least published as a preprint because we got to see it a little bit earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. And seeing things like, you know, nicotine pouches becoming more popular and things like that, the way products move and manufacturing moves, they're moving so much quicker than we're able to respond to. And to be fair, that's not all ours as researchers' fault. There's this whole kind of bureaucratic system that goes along with research. We have to apply for things like ethics approval, which is obviously really important to make sure our research is ethical, but all those processes take a long time. There are delays and things like that. And so there's this whole machine that goes on behind every research study. And if we could speed it up, that would be good. I mean, during COVID, obviously that happened to some extent because the research just needed to be done. And You know, I'm sure that left a lot of people really stressed out because suddenly we have to do things extra quick. But if there was a way we could find to kind of work out how to do that in a more sustainable way and keep that going, it would be super helpful, I think.
Exactly. And, you know, I don't think I'd want to speed up the ethics review process, right? That takes time for a good reason. We want that to take time. But when we're thinking of like the timeline from proposing something to be funded to actually getting it funded mm-hmm. and then having to do what we said, even if those devices aren't available or if like happened for a while, varenicline goes off the market, right? You just have these studies which are kind of caught in this situation where time has moved on since that funding application went in. I think the other thing that really helps, which people are doing more and more and we love as systematic reviewers, is posting their results up on clinicaltrials.gov, right? Because we know the publishing process can take years. And if you have control and can share those results, then that's really, really helpful too for just staying current, which we know is what people want. Well, that is it from us this month. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Nicola and Professor Ling for the wonderful interview. We hope to see you, hear you, have you hear us again next month on our episode of Let's Talk E-Cigarettes. Please subscribe on iTunes or Spotify and stay tuned for our next episode. Thank you to Jonathan Livingston Banks for running searches, to Elsa Butler for producing this podcast, and of course to all of you for tuning in. The music is written by Johnny Berliner and I and performed by Johnny. Our living systematic reviews are supported by funding from Cancer Research UK. The views expressed in this podcast are those of Nicola and I and do not represent those of the funders.
Friend, switching to vaping is safer than smoking. May help you quit in the end. But remember to mention the findings we have. Can't tell us what'll happen long term. Even though we know vaping is safer than smoking, we may still find cause for concern. If you're thinking of switching to vaping, do it! That's what the experts agree. Smoking's so bad for you, they all concur. The vaping beast burning, there's much to learn. Of effects long term yet to be seen.